boom or bust. We're talking Mike Norvell's offense in 2026 because, Michael, the play calling is back in his hands. Are we in trouble for losing Gus Malzahn? Which offense are we going to see? That's what we're breaking down today. What's up, No Nation? I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We're the guys from Plant the Spear. And, you know, Michael, we talked about this a little bit whenever the news broke that Gus Malzahn was retiring. I think everybody pulled the fire alarm when Mike Norvell was named the play caller again. Of course, we also know that they will have an OC by title, right? Not so much as a play caller in Tim Harris Jr. So what we wanted to do in this show is we just wanted to expand on the conversation that we had last time, not to be repetitive, but to just dig a little bit deeper on what the offense might be able to do in 2026, how big of a loss it was that Gus Malzahn is retiring, and maybe, now we're not making excuses for anything, right? But maybe why 2024 was an aberration and it will look better in 2026, regardless of how it looks. So a lot to get into, kind of a fun show today, getting back to the old school, digging deep into things like we do here on PTS, man. So super excited about it. But first off, how are you, my friend? And glad to have you on another episode.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that when the announcement with Gus Malzahn came out, man, you would have thought that they announced they were shutting down the football program. People were upset and calling this a, you know, another mark of a dysfunctional ran program. And I actually saw this as a celebration. I was excited. I think I did a couple of runarounds the house because I was doing cartwheels. Because I really feel like, and we'll get into this, why I feel this way, but I feel like, you know, this is going to be Mike Norvell's best chance to save his job, is him at the helm of the play calling of the offense again. And when Mike was calling plays, obviously we'll look at 2024 and the aberration that it was. But prior to that, even in the desolate years of 2020 and 2021, he had an offense that could score with the best of them. And you saw that go away, and we're going to into that. But I this deep dive, I hope you got your shovel out because we're getting ready to get into the numbers.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because you mentioned the thing about the reaction to Gus Malzahn where it was like, think about halfway through last year, everybody was ready for him to go anyway. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are like, yes, I understand this is a good thing. It's kind of a gimmicky offense that struggled to score on the road, and we're going to get into all that. But it was funny how he was kind of the problem, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, no, what are we going to do without, you know, Gus Malzahn? And, right, you know, I want to start with a couple things just saying, you know, with that whole announcement is, look, we heard that there was, now that the things have played out like they have, we've heard some dysfunction and mm-hmm. that there was some butting of the heads between him and Mike Norvell on how the offense was being called, the personnel was being used and things like that. You know, there were some things we didn't love about the way things were being played out by the offense. And, you know, again, that was a change that was, we believe, forced upon Mike Norvell to go get a play caller after you were brought here as an offensive mind, and it was kind of taken from you after 2024, and maybe rightfully so, because it was one of the worst offenses we had seen in program history. But I just don't think that it's going to be some kind of major loss that Gus Malzahn, shoes that can't be filled, right?
Right.
And so that's what we're going to really kind of focus on today. Because like we talked about on that last episode, man, I think when you look at Mike Norvell versus Gus Malzahn, you didn't have the low floor for Mike Norvell until 2024 happened, right?
Right?
The guy's been a play caller for 15 years, never had a season like that. But once you know it's in there, you know it's in there, right? So with Mike Norvell, to me, I feel like the floor is lower because Gus Malzahn has never had a season that bad. But the ceiling is a little bit higher because when you look at his history, Mike Norvell's had pretty much a lot of more high ceiling, better offenses than Gus Malzahn has. I mean, when you just start with him, his history as a play caller, right? Mike Norvell has produced as a primary play caller, OC or head coach, a top 20 scoring offense in 10 out of his 15 years as a play caller, but only 2 out of the 5 years he's been at Florida State. Now, that does not count 2025 because he was not the primary play caller. He averaged 34.6 points per game in 2023, which also figures in that you lost Jordan Travis the last couple games there and it hurt your offense, and 36.1 points per game in 2022. Gus Malzahn has not averaged over 34 points in a game during any single season since 2014. So this is what we're saying when we say Mike Norvell has that higher ceiling, but he also has that lower floor, knowing what we saw in 2024 is in there. The problem for me, Michael, is what are we going to see in 2026? Because with Mike Norvell, he's averaged 37 points per game with Jordan Travis, but only 20 points per game without Jordan Travis, including the end of 2023 at Florida State. So that's the concern, right? Is the years that he looked most like Mike Norvell and that typical offense that we expect from him was the years that he had a field general 6th and 7th year quarterback making the start for him, where he was allowed to do a lot of things at the line of scrimmage. He knew the playbook like the back of his hand. So that's where the boomer bust factor comes in, because let's be honest, he's not going to have a Jordan Travis level quarterback rolling out there running this offense this year. But before we dive into the numbers, I'll throw it back to you, because I will say that, you know, and you watched some film on this, so you can elaborate, but we feel like the quarterback situation could be kind of similar to a little bit of what you saw in 2021. If it is Ashton Daniels, maybe even a Kevin Sperry, where you have a guy like Jordan Travis in 21, who was still an elite, dangerous type of runner, but was not a developed passer yet. Right. Yep. And so I do think that obviously going into 2026 versus 2024, you will have a better offensive line. You will have better receivers. And so minus the quarterback, which might be the bottleneck at this of the offense, all the pieces are in place to have at least a 2021 style offense when you look at the style of quarterback you're going to have. But the last thing I'll say before I throw it to you is, if it is Ashton Daniels, I want to at least divide the time at Stanford and Auburn, because when he was in that more pro-style offense at Stanford, he just didn't do well. But when you saw him go to Auburn and they kind of simplified the offense, which is more of what you'll see with Florida State, he actually excelled pretty decently. So I don't want to shut the door on him yet. But, man, you went back and watched some film of the old Mike Norvell, the one that was brought here to be an offensive mind, right? And so that you were the one that brought up the 2021 comparison. So give me some thoughts on that, and then we'll dive into some numbers.
Yeah, I just think that when you went back and look at 2021 Norvell, what you saw was a lot more creativity in the play calling, right? You saw the run scheme that had different variations to it. It wasn't the same, just kind of, I think, you know, Gus Malzahn ran about 4, 5, 6 combination of run calls. He had about 7 combinations of play calls for passing, right? Deep shots, you know, quick outs, right? Whereas Mike Norvell, you saw level routes. You saw routes in the middle of the field. You saw routes to the outside corner. You saw routes digs. You saw hitches. You saw seams. You saw a lot of those different things. You saw, you know, overload on one side with a tight end that looks like he's covered up, but he actually is not. He runs, you know, the biscuit touchdown against LSU. Like, you saw all those really cool creative things. That was 22 and 21. You saw some of that aspect as well too, in that thing. And then I just think that too, you have to look at the quarterback. Okay. Look at the quarterbacks that he's had, you know, when he was a play caller. In 2020, he started with James Blackman. He had 2 games. Trevor Purdy started 1 game. And then obviously Jordan Travis and Tate Rodemaker started games there. And in the games where you saw Jordan Travis is when you saw the full capacity of what the offense could potentially look like. Then in 21, you had Tate Rodemaker, you had McKenzie Milton, and you had Jordan Travis start different games in that game. And again, when the game was under a pure athletic dual threat quarterback, that's when you saw that offense come alive. Now, I'm not saying it was always perfect, but it was always open to its full potential. Then obviously in 22 and 23, he settles down in Jordan Travis as his quarterback. And then you see the offense basically come alive. Like, it just opens up. So then you go into this 24 season and you don't have a true dual threat quarterback. You have a guy who's unwilling to run or maybe was injured here or there. You have an offensive line that was predicted to be one of the best in the country, ended up being one of the worst in the country. And so now the trigger person of that offense could not navigate it in a way that it was supposed to be. But if you want to go back and see the core of Mike Norvell's offense, you need to look at that 21 season. I watched, you know, a couple games, the UNC games particular, where Jordan Travis was not the polished passer that we knew in 22 and really mostly in 23. He was not. He was just, you know, he still had the weird motion. He's still short changing the throws. He was throwing off his back foot a lot. But in that UNC game, they torched them, torched him. I mean, they were almost were unstoppable in that game. You know, they ended up winning that game closely because UNC made a comeback. But still, I mean, you saw what that offense could be like when Mike Norvell has the type of quarterback that doesn't have to be a polished passer, but has the ability to hit the throws that he needs to. And also, when you talk about Ashton Daniels, Norvell simplified the offense even more for Jordan Travis in 21. So that way he could focus on one side of the field, make one read or run. That was really what it was.
Yeah. And a couple of things I want to touch on there. One is the dual threat aspect, right? We saw that offense come alive when it had a dual threat. Now, you know, back in Memphis days, Mike Norvell didn't use a lot of dual threat quarterbacks. It was more of a kind of true pure passer drop back quarterback. But we know that watching the offense, you know, there when Jordan got banged up in 23 and he couldn't really run like he would, you saw some struggle from that offense, right? Mm-hmm. That was one of the times we started to see some offensive line struggles in 2023, but they were able to overcome it with the pieces that they had in a dominant defense. But once he was able to run like we needed him to, his ability, that offense really broke out, right? And so that's what I'm hoping with Ashton Daniels or Kevin Sperry or Malachi Marshall, whoever wins the quarterback competition, is at least all three of them are somewhat mobile, so you at least will have that aspect. Obviously, Ashton Daniels and Kevin Sperry being the most mobile guys, to where I think you will probably see a little bit of a mesh, a mending of styles between Gus Malzahn with Tim Harris Jr. as your OC and Mike Norvell, who comes from the Gus Malzahn tree, right? Comes from there. And so I think that that is something that, you know, is important to point out. And like you said, I mean, we saw some of the scheming stuff back in the day when they really just didn't have the personnel to overcome a lot of this stuff. But, you know, when we get into talking about, like, was the offense the problem in 2024 and why I don't think Gus Malzahn is the loss is the end of the world for Florida State, right? And so let's look at some numbers here. So we start with the problem is I've seen a lot of people like go on social media or whatnot and say, well, the offense was top 10. So what was the problem? The offense wasn't the problem. It's just a scapegoat for Mike Norvell or whatever the case may be. And I disagree with that, right? And first off, let me back out of that, right? First off, Michael, we got to get it out of the way because I'm only going to say it once on the show, but we have to say it once every show, right? I forgot to do our obligatory warning.
Yes.
We are not making excuses for Mike Norvell in this episode, no matter what we talk about, right? We are simply saying this is what we think could happen or couldn't happen. The obligatory message is Mike Norvell should not be the head coach at football or at Florida State football, right? He should have been fired after 2-10. He should have been fired after Stanford. We tried to fire him after Miami. Listen, I just got to get it out of the way because I know what's coming, right? So I just want to say Mike Norvell should not be the head coach, but he is the head coach. It's what we got. It's what we're going to talk about. So anyway, back to Gus Malzahn here. So the argument was, again, talking about total offense being top 10. And the thing is, total offense is a really antiquated old way to measure offense, and I think it's really a bad measuring stick to measure the effectiveness of an offense. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. And so for those of you who know football very well, you probably understand exactly what I'm talking about. And for those of you who don't, let me give you a very quick example here, right? So total offense is basically the yards accumulated in a game. And scoring offense is the points accumulated in a game. And as we say at Plant the Spear, you guys have heard us say this 100 times, yards don't win games, points do. Which is why we go with scoring offense, not total offense. So, again, perfect example. Michael, say Team A gets the ball at the one-yard line, drives 99 yards down the field, fumbles it on the one. Well, now you have 98, because you didn't score, you have 98 yards of total offense and 0 points. Well, let's just say Team B's defense picks that ball up, runs it back to the opposing one-yard line, the offense puts it in the next play. Well, they have 1 yard of total offense and 7 points. Who's going to win the game?
Correct.
This is exactly why total offense means nothing. Scoring offense means everything. So, again, back to the numbers here. Total offense, Florida State comes in 6th last year, but the scoring offense was 22nd. Now, Gus Malzahn has a history of kind of padding the stats by pounding the lesser teams that they play. You know, Mike Norvell, I think we beat Duquesne 47-7 in 2022. You probably could have beat them 74-7 if you wanted to, but Mike will literally put in the cheerleaders towards the end of the game. Gus likes to kind of beat up on the bad competition, right? And so that's why you beat East Texas A&M 77 to whatever. And so your scoring offense drops to 22nd. But if you adjust that for power four only, that number drops now to 46. The biggest problem was the scoring offense in road games. When you look at that number, that dropped all the way down to 102nd, which was just, man, it just was not that good, right? That's why you lost every road game that you played. And so, man, that you averaged only 18.6 points per game in road games. Now, when you look against just the ACC here, you were first in total offense, which sounds great, but you were third in scoring offense. Once you filter out those East Texas A&M and Kent States again, you go down to 12th, and you were 11th in conference play. I mean, again, for instance, you scored 11 touchdowns in five road games last year, but you scored 11 touchdowns versus East Texas A&M. So to me, man, that's why I'm looking at, like, I don't think Gus is a major loss, right? The numbers got inflated by absolutely pounding East Texas A&M and Kent State. And so I think when you look at the real kind of context added numbers, the adjusted numbers, it just, it's not a big loss, man. I mean, even in 2023, for example, Florida State was eighth in total offense in the ACC, but second in scoring offense. One of those years we finished first in the ACC.
Right.
One of those years we finished 15th in the ACC.
Right.
So again, as you guys can see, it's more about the reading into the numbers and just saying, oh, we had a top 10 total offense. Moving the ball is great, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't score.
Right. Absolutely. And it was clear that when you looked at Gus Malzahn's offense versus East Texas A&M and Kent State and some of the home games, you know, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, like that, they had great success in a lot of ways moving the ball up and down when you have the home crowd. But when you got on the road, that offense went MIA. I mean, you and I were at the NC State game, and it was like they forgot how to play football. They couldn't move the ball well. They couldn't connect on passes. You know, obviously you had the Tommy Castellanos factor where he, you know, was missing wide open receivers, sometimes wouldn't run the ball out of bounds, things like that. Odd play calling sometimes. There was just this mental cap on the team when they got on the road. But Gus's offense wasn't this end-all, be-all thing. When it's not playing Alabama, it's actually a pretty pedestrian offense when you think about it, right? Whereas when you look at, like, Mike Norvell's offense, I mean, in the biggest games is when that offense would usually show up. Now, doesn't mean they always got a win, but you knew that you were going to be able to be in the game. Whereas outside of Alabama, you figured this was an L automatically. If you weren't playing Kent State, you weren't playing Texas A&M, or you weren't playing Alabama, you weren't scoring a lot of points. I think they averaged what I think was like 13 something points on the road, 11 touchdowns, as you mentioned earlier. I mean, so again, to go back to the premise of this, is that the Gus Malzahn loss is, I wouldn't even see it a loss. This is probably a neutral, if anything.
Yeah. I think it's a neutral with, you just don't know what you're going to get to the downside with Mike Norvell. Right. But again, we're about to get into why I don't think it's going to look like 2024, or at least I hope not. And again, hey, look, for those of you who are on the fence about this, one of two things is going to happen, right? All this falls on Mike Norvell's shoulders now. So either he's going to flop like 2024 and he'll get fired and then everybody gets what they want and that's a win, or he'll look like 2023, we'll win games and that's what we want. So it's a win-win situation either way. But no, man, I think it's true. And one of the good examples that you have here, when you talk about was Florida State's offense the problem last year, I think early in the season, it was not the problem. That was the defense. And then after that Pitt game, they kind of just figured things out. The defense started holding you a little bit, holding up their end, and the offense just kind of went in a shell. And, you know, when you talk about, just for comparison's sake, we're looking up some of the common opponents between what Gus was able to do and what Mike was able to do. You know, you went up to Death Valley last year against a reeling Clemson team who was not very good. Now, their defense was still okay, right? They were 30th in the country in scoring defense. You put up 10 points, right? The last time you went up to Clemson was 2023. They also had the 30th ranked scoring defense, and you put up 31 points. In 2021, when Mike Norvell didn't hardly have any of his players yet, you went to Clemson. They had the number two ranked scoring defense, and you put up 20 points. So again, like you said, in the big games, Gus Malzahn's offense kind of shies away, and yours kind of comes through. Now, in 2024, they only scored 13 points, but they didn't score 13 points on anybody. and in 2022, you put up 28. So again, man, you can just kind of see what we're talking about. Because, you know, again, like the defense was pretty good against Bama. You held them to 17 points last year. UVA, it got away from you 46 and two overtimes. Miami 28. They got a really good defense. That was going to be a hard game to win, you know, getting 30 on them. Pitt, you gave up 34. That was terrible. But Stanford only put up 20 points. That should have been enough. That's probably more points than Stanford should have put up.
Correct.
That's enough to win the game. The offense put up a whole whopping 13 points. Wake, you did hold them to 7, but offense held up their end of the deal. Clemson, you gave up 24 points, only 2 touchdowns, and none in the second half. It was 3 field goals. So the defense kept you in that game. Yes, the offense just could not score. Virginia Tech, they held them to 14. That's, I mean, you scored enough, so the defense did their job there. NC State, I mean, they did score 21, but you had them at 14 points with 2 minutes and 28 seconds left. You got a punt. You fumbled it inside the 15, and they scored with less than 2 minutes left. Like, don't fumble the punt, and you hold them to 14 points at home. Have you not doinked it off your head and held them to 14? Look, the only 2 defenses that held them to fewer points at home was Miami and Notre Dame.
Right.
And both of those were on the road. So the defense, now the Florida game got away from them a little bit. They gave up 40 points, but the offense was the problem at the end of the year. The defense was not. And so to me, I think this is, like you said, it's not a loss. If anything, it's a net neutral with an upside potential, right? And so now let's talk about Mike's offense, and let's talk about potentially why 2024 may have been an aberration and hopefully does not happen again. And I think most of us understand, right, that there was a lot of problems that went into 2024. It was just a trifecta of crap. There's no other way to say it. But there are some things that you can really point at that was the problem, right, first and foremost. But, Michael, before we get into that, you know what's never the problem? That's finding awesome gear at Alumni Hall FSU. And, look, if you guys are ready to load up for the season – they got all kinds of specials for you. Stock up with 2 for $38 tees. Baseball season's coming up. They got baseball gear. They got softball gear. They got everything that you need for game day to get right. And you can find them at 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Whichever way you do it, make sure that you save 10% by using code SPEAR. So that's Alumni Hall. And save 10% with code SPEAR. So, man, I really appreciate you guys supporting them and for them supporting us. And shout out to my guy Kenny the other day. Texted me a picture of his Alumni Hall package when it came in and said, man, I'd never heard of it before you guys, and now I'm getting gear from there. So, again, man, just shout out to you guys for supporting our sponsor, Alumni Hall. Make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. So, Michael, let's talk about some numbers in 2024. And they're painful to look at, but they do tell a story, right? And let's start with the pass block efficiency grade per PFF, because we know for the most part the offensive line was 90% of the problem.
Correct.
With 2024, right? And we were all duped, right? Nick Saban, the NFL scouts, Mike Norvell thought that they were all supposed to be this great offensive line. So what happened in that year? Maybe we need a 30 for 30 to figure that out.
We do.
But – the main thing I want you to remember too, as we go through some of these numbers and slides, is that, you know, for all the crap that we give these coaches and this coaching staff and everything like that, some of this just does come back on the players, man. Mm-hmm. There's just no way around it. Like, there's no coach who's being paid a handsome salary at the Division I level maybe other than Alex Atkins, is coaching their players to go out there and miss blocks or make overthrows or drop passes. No one is doing that. Mm-hmm. So eventually, some of this has to fall on the players. Now, when we look at pass block efficiency grades per PFF, I'm going to read these out. You can see them on YouTube. If you're on the podcast only, we'll read it out so it makes sense here. So what this is basically it gives you an efficiency grade based on pressures and sacks relative to the amount of number of dropbacks you had, right? So it kind of smooths the data out. Obviously, you know, when we look at these numbers, UCF's offense doesn't do as much dropback passing as Mike Norvell's. So you're under Gus Malzahn. So you're going to have – their numbers are going to get a little bit of advantage there, but it still tells a big story. And so let's start in 2021, because that was the first year Herb Hand, who's your current offensive line coach, got to UCF. So we have comparable numbers. I also throw out 2020 because Florida State didn't really have a chance to fairly get a roster together in that year. So in 2021, Florida State's pass block efficiency ranking was 94th per PFF. UCF's in the first year under – Herb Hand was 6th. In 2022, Florida State's was 85th. UCF's under Herb Hand was 17th. In 2023, Florida State's climbed all the way to 32nd, but UCF's was still 12th. In 2024, Florida State hit the basement, 124th in the country. But UCF's was 52nd, and that was a year that they had a lot of quarterback problems, too. That was their worst year under Malzahn and Herb Hamm. And then in 2025, Florida State's pass block efficiency grade jumped 100 spots all the way up to 24th. So, I mean, this is Herb Hamm doing the Lord's work out here, fixing this offensive line, which is something that has needed to be done for a decade, right? Now, the unfortunate part is you are starting over with the offensive line this year. 5 new starters coming in. But you had 5 new starters last year, and he did a pretty good job. Right. So this is why the number one thing why we think 26 might not look like 24 is because of the offensive line situation itself should be better. Now, let's continue on with a few more ways to evaluate the offensive line here. And that is rush yards per carry, right? Because that kind of shows it smooths out from just rush yards per game. So we're going to compare again here. In 2021, Florida State averaged 4.13 yards per carry, which was 51st. UCF was 11th. Now, we know they're always going to have a good rush offense right. under Herb Hamm and Gus Malzahn. We know that. But 2022 was your best running year under Mike Norvell, 5.19 yards per carry, 15th in the country. You're actually better than UCF at 19th. 2023, we know the offensive line wasn't super great in that year. It did step back a little bit from a running perspective, 3.98 yards per carry, 59th in the country compared to 7th for UCF. 2024, again, the same kind of drop-off that you saw with the pass block efficiency grade, 2.7 yards per carry, 113th in the country, and 10th was UCF's ranking that year. So you can see, man, it just fell off a cliff. Herb Hamm comes in, 4.4 yards per carry, 35th in the country last year. So he's taken you from 124th to 24th in pass block efficiency and 113th in rush yards per carry up to 35th. That's why I don't think it's going to look like 2024. Now, a couple more things, Michael, and then I'll throw it back to you. We'll talk a little bit more about the run game here. And this is a slide that I found. Credit to Stats of War on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. This shows yards before contact versus yards after contact. And what this basically breaks down to is your yards per or before contact. That is more the offensive line slash scheme, right? Yards after contact is more running ability. This is why the slide we're looking at in 2024, you see Boise State's logo at the top because Ashton Genty was just an absolute beast, right? Also, look all the way out here to the right of your screen and see that UCF logo. That means they led the country in yards before contact. So they had the best offensive line and run scheme in the entire country in 2024. Now, don't turn your head too fast. You might get whiplash. Go all the way to the left. And out here, us and Kent State are hanging out way out here in the back. So Florida State had basically the worst offensive line in the country outside of Kent State, and they didn't have a running back that was good enough to overcome that. Now, let's fast forward to 2025. Now, he only had this through week 11, which basically counts everything but the Florida game. Florida State's logo, you can see, is kind of to the right third middle a little bit here. You see Indiana, you see Duke over in that way. So you can see the difference. Herb Hamm took us from the far left of the graph kind of to the middle right here, right? So you see a big improvement in the running game from the offensive line perspective. You also see the logos moved up higher on the graph, so you can see that the running back ability is better too. And so one thing I do want to say is, again, man, not to like trash anybody on that 24 team. They were here, they were trying, but there's a reason Toa Philly, he was a great gadget back. He had been passed up like 3 years on the depth chart. Roydell Williams was hurt that year. He was never really good here anyway. You didn't have a special back and you had a terrible offensive line, right? And so to me, man, that's just a lot of the reasons why you can see why 2024 was just so bad was they could never get a run game going, and they couldn't protect a quarterback who, like you had said, lost a lot of his mobility, whether it was unwillingness or injury. Now, we have a couple more numbers to go through, but, man, I just want to throw it back to you and get some thoughts on those numbers, because if you give 2024's team the 2025 offensive line, even with DJU and those receivers, and, again, keep in mind your receivers are Kentron Portier, Hakeem Williams, Malik, you know, Ja'Kai Douglas, right. Ja'Kai Douglas was your leading receiver that year. So it wasn't a loaded receiving core either.
No.
If you just give them the 2025 offensive line, I bet that team probably is coming pretty close to making a bowl.
Yeah. So, like, what I want to talk about to that point is, let me go back to 2021. Your offensive line, starting offensive line, Robert Scott at center guard, or tackle, sorry, Bavion Johnson at center guard, Devontae Love Taylor, center guard, and tackle Darius Washington. Okay. That offense, you know, they could run the ball. They could grind you out. They're going to run counter till they knock you away, right? You trust that offense was going to move the ball and get into scoring position. Okay. Then in 2022, you had Robert Scott at left tackle, but he gets hurt, right? You got Dylan Gibbons, who's left guard. You got Darius Washington, who's now center. Dimitri Emmanuel and Jason Turntime, who kind of rotated right guard position. And then you had Bless Harris at right tackle, right? That 2022 offensive line was phenomenal. Man, they
were the best we've had since probably 2013.
Yes, they were running over everybody. Gosh, they were running the game. Even the three game losing streak that we went through with Wake Forest and NC State and Clemson, like they were still able to move the ball, right? Then you went to 2023, okay? Robert Scott's back, but he gets hurt. Bless Harris, he gets out. You had Casey Roddick, Maurice Smith at center, Dimitri Emmanuel, and Jeremiah Byers and Darius Washington were also heavily involved in that. Now, the run game starts to suffer a little bit because the offensive line wasn't as good run blocking in 2023. They were great pass blockers, but they weren't good at run blocking. So much so that we have the infamous North Alabama game because we couldn't run the ball and we were down 13-0 or 13-3, I believe it was, whatever it was. And Jordan Fields forced to now run. And of course, we know about the hip drop tackle and, you know, the whole...
The rest is history.
The rest is history, right? So then you get to 2024. Mike Norvell comes out and says, this is the best offensive line. Nick Saban on game day in Dublin, Ireland says, this is an NFL offensive line. These guys are going to be big and strong and fast. Everybody, NFL scouts are saying the same thing. I mean, they're talking about how this is the best offensive line in the country. You had Darius Washington at left tackle, TJ Ferguson at left guard, Maurice Smith at center, Keandre Jones and Richard Leonard the fourth. They kind of exchanged the right guard position, and Jeremiah Byers and Robert Scott, which Robert Scott was injured most of the time, did that right tackle. And that was the worst offensive line in FSU history.
Yeah.
Now, let me just tell you something. I get it that 24 team was absolutely atrocious. And let's say you have a high school quarterback back there. Let's say you have high school receivers back there. And let's say you have a high school running back there. But if you got a college level, NFL level type offensive line, that quarterback, those wide receivers, that running back, they're going to do something. But the problem was we had high school offense. We had a middle school offensive line. And then we had maybe high school level play in the quarterbacks and receivers and running back. And that combination was atrocious. Now, who do you blame? You blame Mike Norvell. That's Mike right. Norvell's fault. He is the GM. He's the one who picked those players. But the play calling can't be in a lot of ways. You can't really blame it on play calling because he was only play calling to the players he picked. So it is his fault, but it's not the play calling fault, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if I drive a Corvette on a racetrack and I have four racing tires, it's going to mm-hmm. do great. Oh, but if yeah. I take the same Corvette and I put some, you know, donuts on all four sides of right on all four corners, we're going to be in trouble real quick.
That's right.
And so that's the thing, man. Like, yes, he still deserves 100% of the blame for assembling such a that's bad right. product. For his single biggest misstep in this entire tenure that he's had was not firing Alex Atkins sooner, right? That's right. And so you see a lot of the blowback of what happened at the end of that year with 23 and the way maybe they handled things that they shouldn't have going into 24. And it blew up in their face. But like you said, man, a lot of the play calls were there. Like how many times did you see a wide open receiver, whether it be in the end zone against Boston College, whether it be Malik Benson over the top, that was just wide open and DJU just missed him.
Yep.
Or they just dropped it.
Yep.
Even if he did hit it. And gave him time to even throw the ball.
Right.
And so there was a lot. And then when you can't establish a run game, that makes everything worse too, which is why the next slide I want to bring up here kind of really shows how important that is. Right. And so these are over the years, the games where Florida State was able to top 200 yards on the ground. The second number you'll see that's in parentheses is versus Power Four, because we know teams just
Right.
I think we ran for, what, 400 and something yards against East Texas A&M this year. You know, we ran against for like 400 yards against Duquesne in 2023. So I like to kind of couch it with that a little bit. And then the lows. How many times did you get held under 100 yards? So in 2020, they were able to run the ball, right, with Mike Norvell. They were not able to throw it very well, but they averaged almost 200 yards a game that year. They went over 200 in four games, three against Power Four teams, zero games held under 100 yards. 2021, they had five games. I put an asterisk there because one was at 199. Yep. So if you want to give them that, that's basically six games. Four of that came against Power Four teams, but you were held under 100 yards three times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2022, like we talked about, your best running year, eight games over 200 yards. Six of those were against Power Four teams. I believe like six consecutive games you ran for over 200 yards, and not a single game did you get held under 100. That was your best year running the ball. 2023, you can see the run blocking started to step back a little bit. Only three games over 200 yards, two against Power Four, and four games under 100 yards. I think he only ran for like 33 yards against Clemson. 2024, it was bad. Not a single game over 200 yards, seven games under 100 yards. And a matter of fact, the only two games they won were the only two games that they rushed for over 100 yards. I think they ran for over 100 against Notre Dame, but that game didn't matter. 2025, they ran for over 200 yards five times, three against Power Four competition, and were held under 100 yards zero times. So the thing is, man, like Mike Norvell, if you look through the history, he's been able to put up the same kind of rushing numbers a lot of the times that Gus Malzahn has.
Right.
Because, again, they come from the same tree. It's just a little bit more pass-heavy in Mike Norvell's offense. Now, why does this matter, right? Why is this so important? Well, look at the number at the bottom here. Record when rushing for over 200 yards in a game, they are 20-6. Record when held under 100 yards, 3-11. So you can see why it's so important to have that ground game. And again, we go back to 2024 and just how bad that run game was. And so I think this year, you know, not even just talking about the offensive line and Herb Hand and the better setup that you have there, you also have to look at, man, again, no offense to the backs that you had in 2024, but Trey Wisner was a 1,000-yard back on a playoff team 2 years ago. Kroma was as good of a freshman as we've seen, right? So you have better backs in that rotation too. And then a couple more things I want to throw at you here is when we talk about the receiving core, this is another reason I think 2024 was an aberration and it will be better in 2026, and that is your drop pass percentage. So in 2025, Florida State dropped 5.3% of their passes. That number was 8.4% in 2024. Now, that might not sound like a huge increase, but 8.4%, I believe at the time I looked it up, was the highest drop percentage in the entire country. 2023 was 6.6. Buddy, we dropped some passes in 2023. I do remember that. 2022, 5.1%. 2021, 3.9%. So all in all, the point of what we're trying to make here is that if you give Mike Norvell's offense a Herb Hand-esque offensive line, what you got in 2025, say the offensive line gets 0% better and it just stays, what did we say on the pass block efficiency? It stays top 25 on pass block efficiency, top 35 in rush yards per carry. If you do that and you have receivers who can actually catch the football, which is, we've seen Deuce, he's a proven 1,000-yard receiver. We saw Danzy have a kind of a breakout season as a freshman. He's only going to continue to get better. You got Boggs back. You got a couple of other guys. If you give him a decent receiver, again, remember what we saw in 24, Portier and Darion Williamson and just a whole bunch of guys who are probably selling insurance right now. Hakeem went to Colorado, talked crap about Florida State, did absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So, man, you give them the pieces to have a decent offense. I think the problem is, Michael, you know, it's a lot of college football. And again, Mike Norvell shouldn't be here. A lot of it's, what have you done for me lately?
Right.
And people tend to only think, oh, crap, here comes 2024 again. But the offense was pretty darn decent in 22, 23, and they were kind of finding their way in 2021 with a similar quarterback situation that we have now. So, you know, and if even in 2021, this is a better receiving core than you had then.
That's right.
Is a better offensive line than you had then. So the biggest question to me is going to be what you can do at quarterback, right? And you know, I mean, you look at Ashton Daniels last year. He didn't play a whole lot. He only had 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. I believe I heard someone in his introductory press conference say that one was like a tip pass and one was a Hail Mary. So really, they weren't on him. Auburn's offensive line was 116th in pass block efficiency last year. So you put him behind a better offensive line. I'm not going to say better receivers because they had Cam Coleman and all that, but they did drop 7 passes against Alabama, or they might have actually won that game. you know, I think the pieces are there. Now, and I'll throw it back to you for some final thoughts on this, man, but, like, I think from the top side of things, Deuce is a playmaker. Wisner's a playmaker. I don't know that – I do worry about the offensive line because you're rebuilding from a lot of, like, G5 FCS guys that I do worry about there. You got a couple of Power 4 transfers. But – by far and away, when you look at what we saw in 2024, with hindsight included, versus what you have in 2026, I think the pieces are there to be a much better offense, right? Especially when you factor in, yeah, DJU, who, had he have been mobile, had he have been able to run for 500 yards that season, the DJU we saw in his last days at Clemson, where he wasn't a great passer, but he could at least run the ball. He could use that big body size that he just did not do at Florida State. Man, that was such a limiting factor to that offense because that's what you were banking on. If Ashton Daniels, let's just say hypothetically he is your starter, if he's healthy and able to run and give you 600-800 yards on the ground like we saw Jordan do at times, and he's able to just be an okay passer with really good receivers and a pretty decent offensive line, I think the numbers, the pieces are there for Florida State. Maybe you're not going to be that 22 offense. Maybe you're not even going to be the 23 offense, but I don't think it's going to be 2024 bad.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think it could be that bad. Like, I think you're going to have a better level of offensive line play than you had in 2024. I mean, it's already been proven that Herb Hand does not, at least from what we've seen at UCF and did here, he's not going to produce you a bottom 60 ranked offensive line. So if you get 50th ranked offensive line or better, you're going to be in the net positive in that sense. You do have a better core of wide receivers than you had in 2024. And right now you have the ability that you did not necessarily have in 2024, where you brought in a also ran quarterback, right? Who wasn't really in the market of running, who for whatever reason that was, and also just wasn't very good at the quarterback position at the tail end of his career. He had a little revival at Oregon State because of the type of offense that he was able to run, which was a lot of under center, a lot of short passing game. You didn't leverage that in 24 because you didn't have the receivers or the offensive line to give you time to make that kind of a game. I think in 26, you will have the opportunity to mold Ashton Daniels or a Malachi or even a Cameron Sperry in that sense. You can simplify the offense, a lot of RPO stuff, a lot of short stuff, a lot of leveling stuff. Obviously, the run game, if the offensive line is, again, middle, if it's middle of the pack, you're going to be able to run that ball, right, which will set you up nicely to at least get into the red zone, and then you can come up. Mike Norvell is one of the best schemers in that red zone. The red zone plays that he comes up with is I think are still pretty really good there. You know, he likes to script that first 15 to 20 play calls there. He's really good at that. The knock on Mike Norvell has always been what happens after the script. When the script runs out and he has to start like a boxer, he starts juking and driving to figure out what's his next game plan. That's always where you get a little bit of murkiness with Mike Norvell. But if he can figure that out, if he can get better at having that year off, then I think you'll see a better complement of an offense than definitely what you saw in 24. At the end of the day, it's got to be better than 24 or you would assume that he's going to get fired. Now, I guess after this year, you can't assume that anymore. But you would assume that if the offense is 24 or worse, which I don't know how you can be worse, right, then we're probably looking at a 2-win season again.
Hey, he loves to have some catchy slogans. So if it ain't better than 24, show him the door. There's my slogan. But I think you're right, man. I think the biggest concern for me is two things, right? Is I think the offensive line, again, like you said, will be plus. I mean, you know, you go back to the numbers here, right? In 2022, the pass block efficiency was only 85th, mm-hmm. and the rush yards per carry, it was top 15. So you had the numbers there, but that was your best offensive year under Mike Norvell. It wasn't even 2023, really. Mm-hmm. And so the things that worry me is the quarterback position, right? Is can you get enough out of that quarterback? Can what, no matter who it is, right? I think Malachi Marshall is your best pure passer, just hasn't proven it against a power four defense yet. Kevin Sperry's another guy that we saw against kind of bad teams last year, looked a little bit flustered in the Stanford game, getting thrown in there. I would like to see them get him more reps, but he's a definitely capable quarterback. He looked good when we saw him. And Ashton Daniels is a guy that, again, he's not a plus passer, but he gives you a legitimate run threat. And so if you can just give him enough simple throws to try and excel at what he's good at, I think he'd be okay too. So the point of what we're trying to say is it's not probably going to be that top 20, top 10 offense, but neither was Gus Malzahn's when you look at, when you adjust for taking out East Texas A&M and Kent State, which it's fun to beat those teams by 70, but it doesn't do any good when you're scoring 11 points at NC State, when you, when you're scoring 13 points at Stanford. I would rather you be consistently actually scoring on the road than just, oh, everything looks good because we ran it up against two bad teams. The other thing that I worry about is you do have five teams on your schedule next year that finished top 30 in scoring defense. Boston College was the only one that finished ranked outside of the top 100. So it's going to be some tough defenses too, right? You have that to go against. But, man, overall, like we said, at the end of the day, I think the offense has a bit of a concern for a lower floor because of we saw 2024. But, again, man, 10 out of 15 years, Mike Norvell's produced a top 20 offense. So I think the trepidation about Gus Malzahn leaving and Mike taking over play calling again is somewhat overblown. I think he'll be fine if the pieces, if you stay healthy. I'm a little bit worried about the defense more than anything. And I will at least say that we have seen the defenses historically get better in year two under Tony White. It's just more of a personnel thing and depth thing that I worry about this year. But with some of the additions that you made at linebacker and stuff, you could see better. So, I mean, it's funny because I know people might eat us up a little bit for sounding a little positive on this one. And, you know, again, we couch it with that he should have already been fired and that this could be terrible and it could look like 2024 all over again. Everybody gets fired and then who cares? But the point is we're just trying to look for some kind of positive through data, through numbers. Let the numbers talk, right? And you can see a lot of times we've said this before about Mike Norvell. When the things kind of got skewed, what are you going to believe is more likely, right? Is it's going to come back to the 10-year average?
The mean.
Or it's going to the mean, or it's going to go more towards the one outlier year. And I think it's going to come back towards the mean. I don't think it's going to be the number one scoring offense, but I don't think it's going to be the number 134 scoring offense like it was in 24 either, right? And who knows if it'll translate into wins. Obviously, it's a complete game. You have to fix a lot of those things. But, yeah, man, I mean, we'll see how it plays out for the year. But I think, again, like you said, you got that higher upside a little bit with just the more expansive play playbook, the calling that they can do in the pass game and things like that. So that's pretty much going to be it for this one. Again, guys, we just wanted to dive in to this whole Mike Norvell taking over plays and why it might not necessarily be a bad thing. But we're going to see it all unfold pretty soon, man. So if you guys are liking this content, be sure to drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel, a rate and review on the podcast. It really helps us reach other Noel fans, and we would be grateful for that. Quick shout out to, I want to just give a shout out to the lacrosse first victory in program history. So that was good. A win over Stetson there. Also softball starting out 5-0. I love to see that. And baseball gets underway this week in Hauser, starts on Friday at 5:00. Against James Madison. We have baseball previews available on the channel if you guys want to go check that out. If you're interested in taking supporting Plant the Spear one step further, you can do that by joining the channel as a tribe member. It's only $5 a month. Everything you give goes back into the show, so we greatly appreciate that. And so, Michael, that's going to be it, man. I know we might get ran over a little bit for being positive somewhat, right? Somewhat. We're just trying to – you know, you just get a little bit tired of coming on and just trashing on the team the whole time.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to look for something positive to talk about. But you know what, man? It's doom and gloom. My Patriots lost the Super Bowl last night. But, you know, hey, nothing prepares you for disappointment like being an FSU fan, a football fan. So I guess it is what it is, man. But, you know – we're going to see it play out real quick, and I hope they open up spring practice a little bit so we can maybe get an idea, a read on the quarterback. But the last thing I want to say before we get out of here is, man, I think at the end of the day, no matter what happens with the offense or defense or anything, I just want to see Killer Mike back, right? That's what I was trying to think of as we were closing was I was like, I know there was something I said on the first time we tried to record this. We had some internet issues. that I wanted to get out. Man, really, I just want to see Killer Mike come back, right? That's 99% of the problem that we saw is pre-23, man, 23 up to 23, Mike was going after refs, get, you know, the whole Killer Mike, the gray hoodie, all that infamous stuff, to just deer in the headlights, Mike. And I think, man, if he can get his edge back, I think Florida State will be okay, right? Long-term, maybe he's still not the answer, but he's what we got in 2026. So that's what we got for this episode for you guys. We will catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles.